Are you really what you eat? Today on Storyline, we pull out some very old recipes. Have a look at this one. I don't suppose you can read it. Well, this is an old one from 3,700 years ago. So, grab your apron, join us as we find out what your refrigerator tells about your religion. Welcome to Storyline. I'm so glad that you've joined me. Whether or not this is your first time watching Storyline, I hope you'll feel a part of this program as we dig into the lives of Bible characters. We're coming to you live. Now, this means that if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you can do so throughout our show, and it's simple. And you can do it in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE, or you can use 707-200-1070 to call or text. For more instant interaction, you find Storyline on Facebook. We also have a very special drawing today for anyone that calls during the program. Naturally Gourmet is filled with tasty and healthy recipes, and I'd like you to have a copy, so you can call now and we'll enter you in our drawing. Storyline is all about stories, and who doesn't like a good story? The Bible contains a collection of the greatest accounts, covering adventure, romance, war, heroes, and even recipes. You name it, the Bible has it. But what makes the Bible very unique is its focus. In Storyline, we focus on the special Bible people and the challenges that they face. We step into their world. We study their victories and their challenges. We want to get close to these Bible characters, and in the process, we want to learn practical lessons for our lives. The best part of it all is that in these stories, you will find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Daniel probably couldn't feel that intense love of God when he was marched into Babylon as a prisoner of war. But one thing was crystal clear to Daniel. He belonged to God, and nothing and no one could change that. This realization makes Daniel risk his life and limb to embark on a strange diet. You can find this story in your Bible, in the book of Daniel, chapter 1. Let's rewind about 2,600 years. Daniel must have thought a lot about food. Even though he was the son of a very prominent family in Jerusalem, food was scarce during the long months of siege. King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and laid siege around it. Babylon, of course, was the new rising superpower, and despite warnings over and over by the prophets, Judah had decided to turn away from God. Everyone was on a ration. And then the unthinkable happened. God gave Jerusalem into Nebuchadnezzar's hands. This must have been very difficult to understand. It must have been even more difficult to watch the Babylonian soldiers march out with articles from God's temple. They were taking these articles back with them to Babylon to put in the temple of their gods. The god Bel and all the other Babylonian gods were gaining the victory over the god of Judah, or so it seemed. King Nebuchadnezzar wasn't just interested in conquering. He was interested in empire building. And he had long-range plans. He ordered that young men, handsome, intelligent, people that could be used, could be trained, that these young men be selected from nobility and the royal family and taken with to Babylon to be trained, to be re-educated, to become loyal Babylonian citizens, and of course to serve King Nebuchadnezzar and whatever he had in mind for expansion plans. Among those selected was Daniel and his three friends. There were many others selected as well, but they don't come into the picture. It's Daniel that comes so sharply into focus. He's been selected and he marches together with his friends all the way to Babylon. For all intents and purposes, King Nebuchadnezzar and his gods had been victorious over Jerusalem and its God. But really, the battle was only beginning. The battle for Nebuchadnezzar's heart, the battle for a brand new opportunity to show God in a completely different context. God was sending in his crack troops to Babylon. The first victory would be on the food court. As part of the re-education program, Daniel and his three friends were given new names. Daniel was given the name Belteshazzar. In other words, may God protect him. But Daniel would not forget his name, Daniel, God is my judge. And he vowed not to let Belteshazzar take over Daniel. He would remain God's man. He vowed not to defile himself with the king's food and the king's wine. But here he faced a problem. He was supposed to eat a portion, this was a big privilege, a portion of the king's food and a portion of the king's wine. This was a real privilege for Daniel, his friends, and all the other young men. They were being given the best of the best. But Daniel saw a little further than this best of the best. Daniel understood that there was so much more than just food involved here. The delicacies, most of them, which contained meat, had been offered to the Babylonian gods. Food, meat, sacrifice, all of these were part of worship. Daniel wants to make a stand, and he's going to do it here at the king's table. He goes to the man in charge of the re-education program, and he makes a strange request. It's a dietary request, but it's so much more. It's about remaining Daniel, God's man. Strangely enough, he doesn't get a flat-out no. God has given Daniel winsome ways, and somehow he has favor with the man in charge. He would like to grant Daniel's request, but he's afraid. He says, if I see that you and your friends are looking paler and weaker than the others, I'm going to lose my head. So let's let things be. Daniel is very persistent. He goes on. He speaks to the person directly in charge of them, repeats his request for vegetables and water. Again, he has a listening ear. Once again, God goes ahead and gives him favor. But this person has the same worries. If Daniel and his three friends look paler and thinner than the others, he's going to be in trouble. Daniel has a suggestion. It's not going to be a long thing. It's only going to be 10 days. A 10-day diet recommendation. He asks, give us the vegetables, give us the water, just for 10 days. And then test us and see what we look like, if we look stronger, healthier, or perhaps we look weaker. It's just a 10-day trial. The person in charge thinks about this request. 10 days is not a long time. So he grants Daniel and his friends their request. For 10 days, they can be given their vegetables and their water. At the end of the 10-day diet, Daniel and his three friends looked far healthier than all of the others that were in the control group. This first scientific experiment had very definite results. Of course, these results were not published in any scientific journal. They weren't made into a video for YouTube, but they did pave the way for Daniel and his three friends to retain their allegiance to God and their special diet. For the whole of their 3-year study period, Daniel and his friends were allowed to continue with this health experiment, but more than that, this allegiance experiment. They could be completely dedicated to God and still be great scholars, be great learners, be a great asset to the king of Babylon. At the end of this 3-year period, Daniel, his friends, and the rest of the group were all given a personal interview with King Nebuchadnezzar himself. King Nebuchadnezzar did some of the testing. And what did he find? Daniel and his three friends were 10 times wiser than all of their class. Daniel and his friends had chosen to remain God's men. And they said so with every single bite that they took. We know a lot about some of the food that Daniel and his friends weren't eating. Ancient recipes and food lists show us that various vegetables, fruits, even mushrooms were used to prepare carefully seasoned meat from livestock, pork, game, fish, crabs, lobsters, shellfish, and even, wait for it, locusts. They were normally cooked in milk, butter, and other fats, and they often had syrup or honey added. Beer was the national drink, and people often cooked with that too. So you may be wondering, what could Daniel and his three friends do with water and vegetables, and that for 3 years? Would four young men have been any good in the kitchen? That would be another question. To help us answer that question, we have Justin Woods with us, and he's going to participate in our hands-on segment. We've hauled Justin all the way over from the control room, which is right behind this wall here, onto the set. Now, Justin hasn't come alone. He's brought some great smelling dishes along with him. I wonder what cooking secrets he'll let us into today. You'll want to watch Justin demonstrate some easy, versatile recipes, so stay with us. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, and remember to call now for our drawing. That's filled with great recipes too that are just perfect for the show. I'm joined by Justin Woods, who is the television director for Let's Pray, which you were probably watching before Storyline, and he also directs all of the live Bible shows. So welcome from behind the scenes to in the scenes.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great to have you with us. And it's really great that you've brought all this stuff along.
Yeah, doesn't this look fantastic?
It does. So, Justin, you are single. You work hard here on
the sets. Oh, yeah.
I mean, why would you want to cook? I would think that you'd be a perfect candidate for a junk food junkie. You know, just dash off and pick up something. I mean, why take the trouble to cook?
Well, cooking your own food is cheap, which I like.
Yeah, that is good.
And it's tasty. I can make it like I like it. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. I like to cook.
Well, this looks like it's going to be fun over here.
Yeah.
So what are you going to show us?
So today we're going to unlock the mystery of hummus. It's a very simple to make mm-hmm. dish. It's made with chickpeas, garlic, olive oil, and salt, and some lime if you'd like some.
Okay, so chickpeas, garlic, salt. Well, for our viewers, if you would like these recipes, we will be posting this up for you as well at our website. So you don't have to jot it all down. Just watch.
Okay, so we're going to start with chickpeas. Now, mm-hmm. a little secret I've got for you is if you open the can of chickpeas, mm-hmm. pour off half the water, put that into your blender, your food processor, it's going to be just the right amount of liquid. Okay,
so
that's a bachelor tip.
Half a can. Good tip.
Yeah, pour off half the liquid. That's the bachelor tip. Then you're going to just add a little bit of olive oil.
All right, so that doesn't really matter what kind of olive oil. Why are you picking olive oil and not some other kind of oil?
Because it just tastes so good.
Tastes
and
good.
It's healthy.
I believe it's one of the healthiest
oils. It is quite healthy, and it tastes great.
Okay.
So just a couple tablespoons of olive oil, and that's the great thing about hummus. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a recipe. You just kind of pour stuff in until it tastes right. You whiz it up in the blender.
So it's not exact measurements?
No.
And you can't mess up?
Well, I've messed up a few times, but it's hard.
It's hard to mess up. Yeah. Okay, I like that kind of a recipe.
And a little bit of salt, about this much, perhaps. Going to put the salt in there.
Okay.
We're pretending this is a blender. Mm-hmm. And then, depending on how much you like your garlic, we'll put a clove or two in.
Okay.
I like a lot of garlic, so actually...
How much do you put in?
Personally, if I had my way, I would have like 10 cloves of garlic and one garbanzo bean.
But you may not be very popular eating that dish.
So, one more thing I like to do is squeeze in a little bit of lime.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to squeeze that.
What's the difference between lime and lemon? Could I use some lemon?
You could also use lemon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just like...
The lime taste.
I just like the lime taste, yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. So we'll squeeze a little bit of that in there. And through the magic of television, mm-hmm. we're going to put it in our blender here. And
wow!
What do you know? Finished hummus.
Now that looks good.
This stuff is fantastic.
Now, what can you do with that?
Hummus, I mean, I've had many a meal consisting of hummus and something else. You can eat it by itself.
Uh-huh.
You can put it on bread.
Uh-huh.
I actually like to boil a potato and put it on the potato instead of butter or sour cream. Just put hummus on
it. Wow, so that would cut the calories and the cholesterol and all that. And you're getting some good protein in there.
Yeah, and you know... The garbanzo bean is one of the most amazing foods there is. It's a perfect balance of all the nutrients that the human body needs. 20% by weight of the garbanzo bean is protein, which is the same as meat. So
this is a wonder food.
Yeah, you don't need meat. You don't need meat to get your protein.
Okay, well we better fly on here because we don't want to miss out on this.
Yeah. So. We've made our hummus.
Okay.
Now let's make some Mediterranean wraps.
Do you think this is something that Daniel may have been interested in making?
You know, I'll bet that he had a variation of this idea a couple times in his life.
Okay, from one young guy to another.
Yeah,
this would have been
definitely.
The kind of thing that he would have
this
had.
This is total bachelor food.
All right,
and it's so good.
How do we do it?
So why don't you grab a dab of hummus there.
Okay, where do I put it?
Just put it right there on your
bread. Anywhere?
Uh-huh.
All right.
As much as you'd like.
Oh, well, it's like it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, and now?
We've got a lot of different tasty ingredients here. We've got some carrots.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some cucumbers.
So what do I do with all this stuff?
We're just going to put it right here. Take however much you'd like of any of these ingredients.
And just dump it all on you?
Just dump it all on there. We're going to make
show me how.
Okay, let's do it. I like a lot of hummus.
So have you always eaten healthily?
I've been vegetarian my whole life, but I used to eat a whole lot of cheese and fat type stuff.
Yeah.
But recently I've decided, you know what? It's just as tasty to be healthy and vegetarian as anything else. So
So for you, it's also been a growing process.
Yeah, it's been a growing process.
So it's not like one arrives.
Well, I'll tell you, when I learned to make hummus, a lot of my troubles were over.
Well, let's put some green on here. I think mine needs some green. And I can just drop some cucumber on there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Now, I'm worried about how we're going to end up eating this at
just
the end.
Just fold it over and stick it in.
Uh-huh.
That's how I do it.
And this, here we have some onion.
We'll also
put some onion on.
Some bell peppers, green and
red.
Boy,
you know, this is looking colorful.
Yeah.
This is looking really good. Well, Justin, a question. Do you see, I mean, with Dave, with Daniel, it's really connected to religion. He's this diet step that he takes. It's all spiritual dimensions. Do you see any connection between all the good stuff we're doing here and your spirituality?
Well, I can tell you from my personal experience, mm-hmm, that since I've started eating more healthily, my mind is clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that God communicates to us through our minds.
Right, so that's the only way.
Yeah, having a clear mind is one of the most important things you can do to have a good spiritual connection with God.
And it can be begin bite by bite, huh?
Yeah, bite by bite.
So how are we going to eat this now?
Well, let's give it a try here.
You've got to just bend this up like
this. I'm just going to make it into a little Mediterranean taco.
Well, before I tackle this over here, I think I'd better thank you for this. And we'll wait until the break to try it out.
Oh, okay.
So thank you so much for joining us with all these easy-to-do recipes. You won't need to spend hours over a hot stove to get these healthy, good recipes on the table. I know what's on my menu for tomorrow. We're going to try this at home, Justin.
All right.
After the break, we're back with guests to sink our teeth into Daniel's diet. So stay right with us. We'll be back. Just in case you want to know, it tastes delicious. You know, watching TV can sometimes get really lonely. But not on Storyline. We have all sorts of tools to help us connect. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HD podcast. And you don't have to ask profound questions or make dazzling comments. If Storyline has impacted you in some special way, or if you have a Bible story that you'd like us to tackle, please let us know. I'd love to hear from you. You may sometimes have to eat on the run, but really, that's not how we like to eat. Meals are moments to enjoy the company of friends and family. On Storyline this evening, we won't all be able to share Justin's delicious veggie wraps, and we don't want to leave you out, but we've gotten together a wonderful team of experts to help us better digest Daniel's story. We have Gerald Klingbauer, who is also my husband.
Well, good that you remember that.
And it's great to have Dr. Gerald Klingbauer with us on the set.
Great to be here again.
And we also have two other guests, and I'm guessing that you've seen them here somewhere, sometime before. We have Sylvia Fagel, and Sylvia has been on Storyline before. I remember many of our viewers actually requested a whole wheat crackers recipe. Sylvia is a dietitian, teacher, researcher, a wonderful cook, and a gardener. So a special welcome to you, Sylvia.
Thank you.
It's good to have you again on Storyline. And we also have Dr. Peter Landless joining us. Dr. Landless is a nuclear cardiologist and an associate director of the Health Ministries Department of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So a special welcome to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, if our viewers listen very carefully, they may just hear some hints of a similar accent between us.
Then they will be doubly blessed.
Well, our story, in case you're joining us, you want to know that our story is coming from Daniel chapter 1. So let's open our Bibles to Daniel chapter 1, if you have your Bible along. And this is a great story. It takes place in Babylon. Now, Babylon is a very sophisticated place. Mm. I found a great picture. Let's have a look at that picture. Right there we have the Ishtar Gate, right?
Right,
Now I'm wondering if we have the other one where we can see the brick color. There we go.
That's a better one.
That's the better one. That one's in the Pergamon Museum?
In Berlin, that's right.
And that is a fantastic gate. Just look, each animal is made out of different brick sizes on the wall. And I believe each brick has Nebuchadnezzar's name engraved at the back. It's an impressive place. Ooh, now a nice close-up of the wall. Here we have a lion. What really impresses me about this picture is this is something that Daniel would have looked at. Mm. This is really something he would have seen, the main ceremonial entryway into Babylon. Okay, well, thank you. Now, Babylon had a really sophisticated lifestyle, had a great sophisticated way of doing things, and they also had really sophisticated recipes. We're not talking here about Stone Age stew, and yet Daniel and his three friends risked their lives to eat vegetables and drink just water. Now, is this really all they were asking for? Were they asking for carrots and lettuce and celery sticks?
Anything from a plant.
Anything from a plant.
Could have been many fruits, grains, breads of different sorts.
Probably nuts as well.
Nuts, sure. Yes.
Well, the Hebrew word that's used there is actually anything that has a seed. So, and anything that grows from a seed, that would be included in that request, yes.
So we're looking at a diet of more than a lettuce leaf and a piece of carrot to snack on.
You know, most definitely.
I've never had the impression in all my life that that was what it was.
Okay, well, some people, when they hear a vegetarian diet, think lettuce leaf and celery stick. But we're looking much bigger here.
Yes.
Now, Daniel and his friends, and we just mentioned vegetarianism, Daniel and his friends were not practicing a special vegetarian diet before they came to Babylon. I mean, we know they'd eat the Passover lamb and there'd be different dishes at different times. What makes them decide on this very strange diet?
Well, it seems to me that when they request this in the context of a test of faith. They don't want to defy themselves. The language that's used here in the Hebrew text is a very religious language. You can defile yourself by worshiping another god and by eating also the wrong thing. So they recognize that this is a bigger battle that's going on, not just about food and about getting the right nourishment, but it's a battle between gods here.
So Daniel's not worried about his cholesterol levels over here necessarily.
Well, at his age, he wouldn't have been anyway.
We're looking at about what age?
Young men, 16, 17,
okay.
18.
So generally, we're not worrying about cholesterol at that age.
He wanted to make the right choices right up front.
It's interesting that dissection and studies on some of the mummies have shown that there was such a thing as arteriosclerosis and atherosclerotic disease in that time. So it wasn't that there wasn't that sort of disease, and I think that that brings into perspective the nutritional component. But as Gerald says, this was not merely an issue of what he ate. It was not defiling himself. It was a spiritual decision that he made.
Well, I'd like to look at this defiling then. This sounds a little, I don't know, it sounds like a big ominous word.
It is.
Not defile himself with some of the nice pastries and other delicacies from the king's table.
Don't forget that it wasn't only the delicacies, it was the drink as well.
Okay.
Just to throw that in.
Well, what we know about how people would eat at that time, there was always a component of religion involved. There was a prayer to the god. To the gods, Marduk or Bel or Nebo or any of the other gods that, you know, were the patron gods of Babylon. So it is a battle between the Lord, the God of Israel, and the other gods. And apparently this God of Israel is on the losing end because Jerusalem has fallen. And they are there in captivity.
Yeah, now you mentioned that our very first verse of Daniel chapter 1 speaks about this conquest that the king of Babylon came to Jerusalem, besieged it. Mm-hmm. Verse 2 is very significant. Verse 2 says, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles of the house of God. And then notice what he does with those articles. He carries it into the house of his God and brings it into his God's treasure room.
It's a clear rule here. My God is bigger than your God. We won, so we keep it in our temple.
And would this extend to the food as well?
Definitely. Uh-huh. And it was, like anything at that time, it was interwoven with religion and with worship. So defiling here has something to do also with the foods that were dedicated to the gods of Babylon.
Mm-hmm. So Daniel is asking permission for a 10-day diet. What is he risking over here? Today we're very used to meeting people and someone says, no thanks, I can't eat that, I have a food allergy, or I just don't go for this kind of thing, and we'd accept this. I'm having a feeling that this isn't going to be this kind of a case with Daniel.
He's turning down the king's food and drink.
This is insulting.
Yes. He's literally risking his life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we see this reflected not just with Daniel's request.
But Melzer as well.
Right.
Scared he's going to lose his own head if this doesn't work out well.
So everyone's scared. This is a dangerous diet.
So it's really, I mean, as I was reading this again, I couldn't believe that he said, well, just give me 10 days. I mean, in 10 days, I don't know. I'm not the expert in diet or in medicine, but I don't think that you could see, humanly possibly, a great change in 10 days. Maybe you can. I don't know.
Who wants to say what the change can be?
I'd like to give a perspective from when I read this again today. And I read this many years ago initially and underlined it a number of times because the choice that Daniel made was a very important choice. The 10 days is not only the diet that he ate, it's in comparison to what everybody else was eating and drinking. So for 10 days, pulses and water, or vegetables and water, no meats, but standard simple fare.
Okay.
Compared to people who are eating a rich diet, drinking probably excessively, you know, most people look good when they wake up without a hangover.
So
after 10 days of not having a hangover, he might have looked very good. Not having had too much rich food. When people eat too much food before they go to sleep at night, rich food, they don't sleep well. Mm-hmm. He was able to get up, to exercise, to do the things that he would like to do. So I think in every way in 10 days, he would have looked a lot better than people who are living a far more complex and, I don't want to use the word profligate, but, you know, an excessive life, a life of just too much.
So this was just, yes.
There's the angle of possibly they had just made this forced march of hundreds of miles, and maybe the more vegetarian diet was a better recovery diet.
So you're saying it a good recovery, but that's a good point.
Rather than a lot of protein, a lot of fat, and wine, that this may have helped in the recovery more
quickly.
Well,
that's definitely a point we've got to explore some more over here. We're talking about Daniel's 10-day diet, and perhaps you're wondering if saying no to that chocolate bar will give you some extra brownie points somewhere. Or perhaps you're asking if health is all just about eating or not eating certain things. After the break, we're going to look at these questions and more. Now, don't forget to call and be entered into our drawing for those very tasty recipes. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. We're discussing diet and religion. Oh, and here's our great giveaway book. Have a look. It's packed full of some really interesting recipes. I see here peppermint ice cream, red lentil soup, and there's plenty more in there. So give us a call. I'd like to give this to you. Now, in medieval times, I know People used to sometimes, there'd be times of the year where people would not eat certain things or, you know, leave off something they really like in order to gain points somehow, maybe collect something extra special in heaven or help someone somewhere. Is our story of Daniel's diet giving a biblical basis for this practice?
I don't think
they
so.
They look at you.
They look at me, all right. I don't think so. It seems to me rather that he's just the opposite. He says, I trust more on God's help and God's care of this because I'm venturing out, I'm stepping out, I am treading dangerous ground.
10 days.
And only ten days for the test. No hangovers, true. But will it last for the whole time? And somehow he had to rely completely on God. He wasn't saying to God, look, here, hey, I'm doing well, right? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. He was putting God as much to the test as he was putting himself to the test. Mm. He was throwing himself completely and saying, I'm not going to have the food which is offered to idols. I'm going to go your way, and I believe you're going to meet me that way. And the Lord does that. When we make a health contract with him, he honors
meets
it.
Us.
He does. Mm-hmm. In our brokenness.
Absolutely.
Because we remain broken.
Mm. Now, the thoughts just occurred to me that it's not just Daniel and his three friends that are risking their neck by this diet. They're pulling two people in as well who are very nervous. But somehow they have seen something in Daniel. Mm-hmm. I would just flat out say no.
Yes.
But this is kind of strange, isn't
it? It's very interesting. In verse 9, mm-hmm. it says here, now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. Same word that's used when God gives the city into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. So God gives him also grace and favor with this man. So this is a story about God intervening in the life of a young man. I mean, he's 16, 15, 16, 17 years old. He makes a big decision and he sticks to it. And as Peter said, you know, he's also wanting to see God working in his life, God in action. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we are told that they were good-looking young men. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They were smart, mm-hmm. intelligent. They were, you know, they remind me a little bit of what Joseph must have been like.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, they reminded me of myself when I was, but...
Well, you know, I'm a lot more realistic. But, you know, here they were, and they made a great impression.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And part of the reason that they were set aside to have all these special treatments and special
must
foods
have been the special
was because
impression they made.
They were going to be trained, as you said, and retrained mm-hmm. to do a special work. So they had what it took to start with.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know that Daniel, being an Israelite, he had access to very strict dietary laws. That we read about in the Old Testament. Now, later the Christian church would expand and go way beyond the Israelite culture and way of life. So immediately I would think, now, are these kind of laws still applying? Especially all these health recommendations? Is this still something that we're supposed to be looking at today?
I think there's something with the clean and unclean mm-hmm. still that we are much better off if we're using any meat at all. To watch that distinction.
Okay, so you're saying that we have more scientific mm-hmm. basis than what mm-hmm. they had for the kind of dietary laws out here.
It's interesting that this distinction between clean and unclean has nothing to do with, you know, the law of Moses or Judaism. Mm-hmm. It is way before. It's mm-hmm. we know about this differentiation from the flood, the time of the flood. God told Noah, I want 7 pairs of clean animals, but only 1 pair of unclean animals. So people
must
have known.
So this goes way back.
This is creation. This is creation distinction.
Okay, this takes us way, way back. Well, I'm going to jump a little bit and put in a question. I mean, I'm looking at us. We're all different ages over here. And, you know, we can do beautiful things. The makeup people do a great job with us. But we're all getting older. And our bodies are getting older. And we're going to get old and die. It doesn't matter what we eat. Hey, is it really worth tagging on a couple of extra years and not eating certain things? And
if that's the reason you're going to do it, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
if you're going to live for a quality of life, to look after what's been entrusted to you, this body which we've been given, it's a beautiful, wonderful, you may not think it is, but I can tell you that the way that it functions, the way it's structured is just miraculous. And to get the best out of it, you've got to give the best to it and take the best care of it. And that doesn't relate only to what you eat. But you asked the question specifically about the meat situation. Now, meat is a staple diet, has been for many hundreds, thousands of years. But there is some really interesting science coming out about the red meat story, and it's been coming out in huge studies.
Can you summarize it for us very quickly?
Firstly, it's directly related to cardiovascular disease, coronary artery disease, heart attacks, strokes. The second thing, incontrovertibly related. In other words, there is no doubt.
No one's going to contradict you.
The intake of red meat is causally related to colon cancer. This came out in 2011, World Cancer Research Fund finding. So we're finding that the world scientists are looking at it and saying, here it is. The DASH diet, which is a diet that was looking at stopping hypertension, also revealed that the more plant-based foods you eat, the less saturated fats, the better your health.
So we're looking at, these aren't restrictions. They actually scientific advice way, way before its time.
They knew the what, but not the how. We now know the how.
As well as the what.
And it was all about quality of life.
Yes.
It was to have a better quality of life because God wants us to live life to its full.
I like that. Live life to its full. So it's not about constricting us and stopping us and preventing us. It's giving us wings,
liberating
really.
Liberating us.
Yes.
Over here. Well, I think we're onto something good over here. So you're going to stay right with me, and we'll be talking about, well, we have been talking about good food choices, and that's well and good, but implementing them is really, really tough. Now, this alone, of course, is reason enough for you to call now if you want your free book. But how can I find the willpower to make changes, and what happens if my kids don't want to eat healthy food? After the break, our experts are going to help us with easy-to-apply practical advice. So please stay with us. We've been speaking about Daniel's brave stand for God that showed itself, of course, in those dietary choices that he made. Now, most of us have tried a diet at some point or another. I remember trying a very special, I'm sure you remember, Jill, that very special grape diet that we tried.
Did you get a release to tell this story?
I actually didn't. Well, we tried a very special diet, a grape diet. We were supposed to last for a week just eating grapes. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend this. And it didn't work. After 3 days, we decided to head off for the pizza place. Now, I guess most of you have at some point in time decided to try and live a little bit healthier, but it's just that we can't hold on long enough for it to work. Let's ask some advice. How can we implement good dietary choices, good health choices? It's so tough.
If a person isn't willing to just cut off what they're doing and start all brand new, then it's obviously a step at a time.
Now, would you recommend just jumping in there, changing everything from today to tomorrow?
Some people can. I have met a very few who can. But the children angle, I would say, by all means, involve them and start with something they're familiar with. You mentioned pizza. This has got to be kind of at least an American universal favorite and wider than that. But maybe you could suggest, look, on this pizza that we're going to make at home, let's add some broccoli.
And that'll be a first step.
Yeah, and the rest is the usual pizza. And then if at all possible, have the kids help. Have them doing it. Maybe a smoothie. People like smoothies.
So what's a smoothie?
Could use yogurt and fruits. Could do it with just fruit juices. And then say, hey, let's make this one green and blend up some spinach.
Spinach in there. Well, you know, the adults may not like that, but
avocado.
The kids might take to that.
Yeah. You know, with children especially, and I love what you're saying, is to help them to make better choices. Obviously, we need to model that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I like the concept that came out in a book called Nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Nudge is what my mother did to me all my life. You know, nudge me to do this, nudge me to that, and it's wonderful. But they give the definition of nudge, or of working with people like that, as being the architect of their choices.
Mm-hmm.
How do we become the architect of our children's choices? And schools are an ideal place to do that, where there's a cafeteria. Why not put the healthful foods at eye level? Instead of putting all the junk where they can see it, and also put the more healthful stuff, the fruits and the vegetables, first, and then the other stuff. And it's been shown in studies that that works. So architect the choices, show them the better stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the other thing that we need to face very fair and square,
mm-hmm.
and that is not even life-threatening circumstances change people's habits. Mm-hmm. It's been shown.
Mm-hmm.
That a severe heart attack, the diagnosis of cancer, even in individuals who face those life-changing mm-hmm. events, that often that is not enough to bring about a lifestyle change into the long term. So the question comes back.
That's pretty scary.
It is scary. And I think that we need to be real about it, because I was talking a little while back to Sylvia, and she was telling me the kind of work she does, and I just admire people who work with people's dietary habits, trying to change them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there has to be a basic decision mm-hmm. which comes from the individual. There's a choice. And I think that to get back to Daniel,
mm-hmm.
there was power which motivated his choice.
Mm-hmm.
It is something which is beyond ourselves. And that habit is difficult to change.
So you definitely are underlining the power of choice
yes.
over here.
It's choice. Daniel chapter 1 verse 8 says, but Daniel purposed in his heart. And that's a, you know, old way of saying he made a choice. He said, I'd like to do it this way. And very often, and I think that sometimes that's the problem, we stumble. You know, our choices, the decisions we've made, we feel we've fallen
short.
And
then we make that trip to the refrigerator.
Right.
And
I think Daniel reminds us, let's do it again. Let's start all over again.
I like the imagery of a child, you mm-hmm. know. No one begins running immediately.
But he made his decision, and his choice was to serve.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So often our choices are so that I will live longer. His choice was, I want to do this so that I can serve.
Mm-hmm. Serve others and serve God better.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now that's probably a much stronger and better motivation for
Absolutely.
Doing things
yes.
over here. Now, if I had to decide to be a vegetarian, and what benefits could I expect? I mean, would I be able to, we've said 10 days, probably not, but would I become 10 times wiser than everyone else around here?
Don't put money on there.
Yeah. Sylvia, you brought a lovely little graph along with you. Maybe we should have a look at that.
That talks about physical endurance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Let's have a look at that graph.
Okay. There it is. I believe they put people on treadmills and let them go to exhaustion
uh-huh.
on a high fat and protein diet, which would be a lot of meat, mm-hmm. for instance. They came to exhaustion in 57 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The next group had a normal, or possibly, I can't remember back now if it was the same people at a later date, but they had a normal mixed diet with some meat,
mm-hmm.
and they went for 114 minutes, and then the high carbohydrate diet, which means a more vegetarian diet, they tripled the meat eaters. They went for 167 minutes.
Wow. So I can expect a better endurance pretty mm-hmm. soon, if nothing else.
And that's borne out by all long-distance athletes. They carbo load mm-hmm. for days before,
mm-hmm.
build up the glycogen stores in the liver and the muscle.
And that
they
gets
do very
them
well.
Going.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, we our time's running away with us. There's just so much more we could explore here. But I don't want to leave without asking each one of you, or mm-hmm. whoever would like to respond here. We've been speaking about Daniel. Have you noticed a connection between health, lifestyle, and your relationship with God? Just really briefly.
It's a little hard because I've always eaten this way. Mm-hmm. So I can't say I was on that side of the fence and now I'm on this side of the fence.
Well, lifestyle is not just eating. Lifestyle has to do with moving, with exercise, with sleeping at, you know, at a good time and not too late.
Sleeping enough.
And I've noticed that, you know, we started, mm-hmm. both of us, we started walking about 10 years ago, I think. And
we're still walking.
And without the walking, I feel it, you know, I don't
and
have
this. What's the connection to your relationship with God? Just really briefly. Exercise is good, we'd all say that.
Mental clarity.
I'm fresh.
Fresh, mm-hmm. mental clarity.
It stimulates your endorphins, which relaxes you, yes. takes away pain, mm-hmm. but it also helps you to focus. Mm-hmm. I find when I exercise, I can think, pray, speak to him much more readily than mm-hmm. before.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think we had a feast over here. Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you, Peter. And thank you, Gerald. Well, this certainly has been a feast with a very low calorie count. If you came in halfway through the program and you missed out on Justin's veggie wraps, don't worry, all is not lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and you can watch this episode and any other episode at your leisure. If you want to share some tips on helping kids enjoy their veggies or how you've made healthy diet choices, you can go to our website or post on Facebook and Twitter. Oh, and remember that Storyline is available in the iTunes store as a podcast. You can download the entire episode and watch it on the go. Now, don't go anywhere. There's still more after the break. Today we looked at the story of Daniel, and I find this one of those stories which they topped the Bible story bestseller list for me. I find it so comforting to know that no matter what I look like, no matter what society or the fashion magazines may say, no matter what the mirror or the bathroom scale says, God loves me. He accepts me as I am. Now, sometimes that's a baffling mystery to me when I don't see anything lovable about myself. And yet, even though God loves me just the way I am, he doesn't leave me there. I don't have to be tied up by bad habits for the rest of my life. God wants me to be as healthy, happy, active as I can be here and now. He wants me to be all I can be and enjoy a quality of life that can be a tiny taste of heaven. Well, I'm ready to taste and see that the Lord is good. So, well, God can bring on those changes in my life. They may not all be easy, but he can bring them on step by step. Like Daniel, I would like to be God's person. I'd like to say that I'm God's person in every aspect of my life. What I do, how much I exercise, how I sleep. And I'd also like to say that with absolutely every bite I take. Until next time, I invite you to taste God's nearness as you put the plot of your storyline in God's hands.